Leonard Nimoy returns to Transformers. BotCon sold out. Hunting online. This is Geek Existence Transformers.
Now, all we need is a little Energon and a lot of luck.
So welcome to Geek Existence Transformers.
I be your host, Eggleg Fearful, and with me be...
Suki Grab and Calvatron.
I'm going to say I remember when I first got into collecting.
Predacons, terrorize!
Hello, and welcome to the 20th episode of Geek Existence Transformers, recorded March 31st, 2011. I am Insane Galvatron, and with me is...
Weird Wolf 1975.
As of this recording, everything on our end looks good to have a green light as far as BotCon goes. Got our plane tickets, rooms, and rental car all paid for, as well as our convention attendee packages, as we mentioned last week. And none too soon, I might add, as the convention sets are sold completely out.
Yeah, I'm glad that we actually was able to get in on the buying while we still could, because, I mean, if you wanted the convention toys and you were holding out till closer to the con, well, sorry about your luck.
Yeah, you mentioned last week that, you know, last year you waited up to the 11th hour to register. And if you don't want the toys, you can still register to get in and get all the perks of a Primus package holder, only no toys. But, you know, that kind of stinks. I hate plopping down over $100 and getting no souvenirs for it at all. But, yeah, I mean, I had originally pre-sold my toys, so I'd already sold my Primus package ahead of time. But then I decided I wanted a set of the toys for myself and didn't really have the money to spare. I had to use money I had set aside for other things, but I broke down and went ahead and did it because these sets were selling so fast, and it's a good thing I did because I think they sold out the very next day.
Yeah.
I luckily got my box set.
Yeah, I was able to get the Primus package, and then my wife, I picked up a mini-con package for her. I wanted to go back and add on upgrade her to the Primus package. That way I would have two sets of the toys. I had fully intended on reselling the second set. However, because of the difficulty of the online registration and everything, couple that with the fact that Fun Publications decided to open up the pre-registration for BotCon the week of the G.I. Joe convention, JoeCon. Their phone lines were shut off because of that. So I just wanted to call and find out how to do the upgrade without having to go through and just add on or, you know, buy a whole new Primus package. Well, I couldn't call because, like I said, the phones were shut off, and it was kind of crappy. But, you know, truth be told, I'm not really bitter about it because, you know, I'm still going. I still get a Primus package. I'm still getting the toys. I'm just not getting a second set to sell. You know, big deal.
Yeah, I think it's more important just that you actually get to go.
Yeah, and that's already taken care of. I think the biggest... we'll talk a little bit about it in the Ouch My Wallet segment, but the biggest crunch was the actual purchase of the plane tickets, which had skyrocketed since the last time we checked the prices on them.
Yeah, I wasn't too happy about that. It was only 3 weeks later. It's like, okay, we checked the prices, and then, you know, I checked them back in like December or January, and they were, you know, $408 for a round-trip ticket from Kentucky to Pasadena. Checked back, you know, right at the end of February, and the prices had not moved. They were still $408. A mere 3 weeks later, when we actually went to buy them, logged on, pulled them up, boom, $521. $113 in 3 weeks.
Wow. I was just really taken aback by it. I mean, if I hadn't done some financial kung fu over the previous week or two, not only would I not have this cool computer I'm on now, I wouldn't even be able to be going to the con. And, you know, it's kind of disconcerting that things can skyrocket so quickly. And I really do feel bad for those people who weren't able to pre-register, and they had planned, you know, to register later in the year, maybe sometime late April, early May, because some people's finances, like mine last year, were geared more toward, you know, your financial stability at different points in the year varies. Mine, I typically have more available funds in the center of the year, you know, around May, June, July. Typically around the beginning of the year, first 3 months of the year, January, February, March, like it is right now, typically I don't have a whole lot of money in my checking account for various reasons, you know, post-Christmas recoil and all that stuff.
Well, I think, in my case, it has to do with, I think your job is very similar. It kind of slows down a little bit in the winter. So
you
don't make as much money, and then plus your electric bills are being higher because you're having to run the heat. I think everybody's kind of in that boat. You know, this time of year, we don't have a lot of money for those of us on a tight budget. Worked out that way. It seems like every year at BotCon, the last couple, 3 years that I've gone, well, I didn't go in 2009, but, you know, 2010 and 2008, 2006. It always works out to where the convention is at a time when I'm broke, but then like a month or two after the convention, I have plenty of money. Well, like even last year, I was at the convention, had very little money to spend. Not a month after the convention was over, I had like $8,000 in the bank, and it was like, ugh.
Well, see, that's one of the things that I'm doing this year, and I'm pretty proud of myself of the financial planning that I'm doing. Like I said, I did some financial kung fu to kind of get some money squared around because I was in desperate need of a new computer. I was really wanting to get this convention thing taken care of, and I think, you know, it's always wise to take care of your vacation financially before you go on it. If there's any surprise expenditures during the convention or during the vacation, as it were, you'd be able to absorb it a lot more. In this case, you know, our convention is paid for, the room is paid for, the car is paid for, and the flight out there and back are all paid for. So the major expenditures are taken care of. The only thing we're going to really have to worry about out there, and it's not going to be that big of a worry, is buying our food and buying our gas and whatever money we spend sightseeing.
Right. And, you know, so, and like you said, you got to eat whether you're here or there. So, you know, food expenses isn't going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I can survive on the $5 box at Taco Bell.
Oh, yeah. That's one of my favorite things, too. But, you know, being smart and doing financial planning for an event as big as BotCon, one thing I'm doing differently this year than I've ever done before is I went and got a prepaid MasterCard. And what I'm doing, I started it out with a $100 balance on it. I put $100 on it. And tomorrow will be the second week we'll have had the card. We just will not use the card, but each week up until the week we leave of the con, which is approximately 9 weeks from now, as of this recording, we're going to put $100 on it each week. And if I can, I'm going to throw maybe an extra couple, $300 onto it at the end of that, if I can afford it, you know, if it puts me under where I want to be in my checking account, then no, I'm not going to do it. But as it stands, even if I weren't to take anything out of my checking and put it directly into the, or onto the card, by the time we leave for the card or for the convention, I'll have $1,000 on that card. That card is to be used specifically for BotCon. Taking $1,000 into BotCon, you can have a field day with that much money.
I mean, most people look, you know, to make the trip if they have to fly every year, because, you know, some people will complain about the location every year at BotCon. Wherever it is, there's always people complaining about the location. It's on the other side of the country. It should be closer to me. And then you have some people who go every year, regardless of where it is, and they always give the same advice. You know there's going to be a convention next year. Start saving now. And they most of them will say that usually if you can save up about $2,000, that will get you everything you need for the convention. It'll get you a Primus package. It'll get you a plane ticket. It'll cover your hotel and enough spending money. Yeah, even if you don't have a lot in the dealer room, you at least have enough to eat and everything you need to do while you're there. and probably some in the dealer. $2,000 is all you need to have a great time, and that'll cover all the expenses. If it's close enough, you don't have to fly. That's even better. You save money. But you know, that's the advice I always give, is to save up and you can go. So if they say $2,000 to cover everything, and you're talking, you know, hotel, rental car, plane tickets, all that's already covered, and you've got $1,000, you're going to have a great time.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and see, this is money that is set aside for this specific purpose. It's a budget, you know, and it's going to be on this card, so it's not touching my checking account at all. That way, you know, every convention, I know last year, you know, and every year before that, you know, you get into the convention dealer room and you're walking around the con and you're like, ooh, I want that. Ooh, I want that. You know, and you find a few things that, you know, it kind of comes back to you. You know, you're looking at it and you're like, okay, I have X amount of dollars to spend. This is all I'm going to spend. And you walk around the dealer room and you try to be smart and you buy the things that you want. And then, you know, late Saturday, Sunday comes, some deals start popping up, and you're like, well, I would really like to get this, you know, it's only about $30 or $40, you know, maybe if I just stretch a little bit, you know, you're tempted to stretch a little bit, and if you do that, then you tend to overspend, and I actually did that a little bit last year. You know, I mean, it didn't really put a hurt on me, but it put me below where I needed to be, and you know, I regretted it, even though I did have a really good time at the convention. You know, I came away with a box trip to Con and near complete Scorponok with styrofoam insert. You know, so I had a great haul. But, you know, if I'd had a set budget and I could not spend over that, like I will this convention, I'll actually have cash on hand off of this card, then, you know, I'm going to have a field day. Like I said, the con's paid for, the rooms are paid for, everything's paid for. This $1,000, you know, I can go into the convention, and even if I don't want the at show exclusive extras, the bag, extra bag set, you know, I can walk around the convention. I mean, if I see a Fort Max at $700, give me, you know, and just being able to do that would be awesome. You know,
That is cool. I have some stuff in the works to where I may have a good amount of spending money at the con. I don't know that I would spend $1,000 either way, because I have other uses for that money, which I can't really divulge. I probably already said too much. But like you, I'm doing a budget. This year, I hit 5 years with the company I work for, and my pay tops out. And I'm going to take the additional money I'm going to make. It's going to be about $50 a week bring home. And I'm going to take that every week and just put it back for the convention. That starts... Well, April 3rd, which will be this Sunday, marks my 5 years. So that week I will start making that money. I won't see it till the following Friday on that payday. So the last three checks in April and all four checks in May, I'm going to be putting back $50. And, of course, April has five Fridays in it, so that means I've got an extra paycheck that month. That rolls around four times a year. And, of course, it's going to be the first one with, you know, the added money. So that whole check and $50 every other check I'm going to put back. So I should have, I'm guesstimating, around $700 to take with me out there. Now, of course, I got to pay for my food and gas and stuff out of that $700, so I won't have quite as much spending money as you in the dealer room. Plus, I do plan to buy the at show exclusives. That usually runs you about $250. So I won't quite be able to pick up that $700 Ford Max, but I'm still going to have a good time. I'm going to have more money planned as far as to have there than what I did last year. You know, so I can go to the dealer room with at least $200 or $300 that I can spend. You know, whereas last year it was like, okay, I might be able to spare $50. Okay, let's shop around, find the best deal I can get for $50. I don't have to worry about that this year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and what's great about this is I won't have to worry about overextending myself. I won't have to worry about spending money that I shouldn't be spending, because it's money that is set aside for this specific purpose.
Basically, you know, your debit card is off limits. You got this money, you'll withdraw it all off that card, and it's cash. When it's gone, you're done.
Yeah. The only thing I plan on using my debit card for while I'm out there is eats and gas, you know, and, you know, and that'll be few and far between, because I plan on drawing a little bit of cash out, you know, before, you know, we get out there. And, you know, for two people, my wife and I, it's not going to be that bad, I don't think. You know, I definitely want to try an In-N-Out burger while we're out there. I hear they're awesome. But I don't plan on eating there every day. And if we do, like you and I did last year in Daytona, you know, just go to the grocery store, pick up a few groceries, and grill out while we're there, we're going to save a lot of money doing that, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think these things that we're doing is really good tips for those who have never been to a con or are planning to go to this year's con. You know, do what we're doing, you know, plan for it ahead. Don't show up and think, you know, hey, I can just keep a wrangle on what I'm going to spend and expect to do so. It's very, very difficult, especially once you get on that sales floor of the dealer room and you see so many things that you've looked for all your life, you've wanted since you were a kid. It's very difficult to say,
it takes a strong will not to spend money that you know you have, even if you don't know you should spend it. I think it's just there's an electricity in the air because, like you said, you see so many Transformers all in one place. And if you're a Transformers collector, it's like, you know, you're a kid in a candy store. You want everything in the room. And so, yeah, you got to have a lot of willpower. And this is the best thing to do is to budget. Like I said, you know, leave your debit card at home, you know, or in the hotel room, in your luggage, whatever. Just don't have access to it so that you're going to be tempted to run to the ATM machine or hit one of the stores that does take a card. You know, bring the cash, have your budget, save up ahead of time, a certain amount of money to set aside just to spend at the con. And then when you get there, take that money in cash, don't have any cards on you, and just spend until that's gone and quit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key to having a successful BotCon, so that you can A, afford to buy stuff by the saving, and B, not go broke spending more than you should by leaving your card in the room.
Well, and you know that from personal witness, you know, that me, you know, I went into last year's con, what did I have to spend, what, $500, if that?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I might have had $7. I think I did, because I spent $280 on Scorponok and $180 on Trypticon, I think.
So that was almost $500 right there.
Yeah, and I basically it left me with $200 on the sales floor. And I still came away with quite a haul, you know. And what was it, the year in Chicago, the last OTFCC, you know, I went up there with a very, very limited budget, and I think I might have had $150. And you know for a fact, I came away like gangbusters for $150. I think I had maybe 10 figures I came out of there with.
You got to think, though, back in 2004, that was, you know, that was the first official convention, and of course we know how that ended up going as far as the company that's running it went out of business. But those were the days, the early 2000s. I didn't go to my first one until 2003, and then I went again in 2004. And Fun Pub took it over in 2005, and it was in Texas. And then 2006, they were here in Lexington, Kentucky, which was local for us.
Mm-hmm.
And early 2000s up to the mid-2000s was when – because Transformers hadn't gone mainstream yet. Before the movie in 2007, you could still get really good deals in the dealer room because Transformer prices were such that, you know, supply and demand usually – has a big factor in what something's worth. You know, there's usually only so many of an item on eBay at a time, and so that got the prices higher. Well, at the convention, there would be 15 or 20 of that one toy that there's usually maybe two of on eBay. So a supply and demand kicks in, and the prices were usually lower. I mean, you could come out of BotCon with a major haul in those days. But since 2007, you've been attracting larger crowds because Transformers have gone more mainstream. You've got more people doing like the walk-in thing at the conventions. You know, more people cruising the boards and preparing and going to the conventions, and you just have a lot more people there, thus so the supply and demand tips the other scale, and it's hard to come out of there with, you know, like you said a major haul for $200. I mean, you can get some good toys, especially if you shop around, you can get deals, but nothing like you could, you know, 10 years ago or even 8 years ago.
But you know, I mean, even last year though, I did come away with quite a good haul. I'm trying to remember what all I did come away with. Of course, there was Scorponok, G1 Scorponok, and Trypticon. I came away with Scorch, G2 Scorch.
Well, I know you got the Crystal Head Robots.
Crystal Head Robots. Let's see here. It seemed like I got a Headmaster as well. Oh, Highbrow. I came away with Highbrow. Ironhide. Or not Ironhide, but Encore Trailbreaker. Encore Red Alert. No, not Red Alert.
I know you got a reissue Perceptor and had it autographed.
And I had got a reissue Perceptor, and I had it autographed by Paul Eiding and Hideki Yokosan.
If I'm not mistaken, I was the one who found that toy for you. When we first went to the dealer room, I saw one. I knew you'd been looking for it, and I asked him how much, and I called you, and you were like, "I'll be right there," and you came and bought it. And turned out you got even probably half what the Perceptors were selling for in that room. Because every other Perceptor we saw, I think you paid, what was it, $35? $30.
I believe it was 30.
And I think every other Perceptor I saw in the room after that, they were asking like $75. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's because you had the voice actor and the designer of the toy both there to autograph it. And so the dealer said, they were like, "Hey, $75 if you want it." And, you know, we just happened to find the one guy who didn't realize the potential demand on that toy, and we got it dirt cheap.
Yeah. But, I mean, look what I came away with for $700. I came away with two very large Transformers. Which, you know, last year, you know, I got those. And if I stick to U.S. only, you know, there's only one really large Transformer that I need to get now.
Fort Max.
But look at the overall haul that I got. And I'm not even remembering everything that I got. You know, I just listed off a few things, and that's still quite a haul. So, you know, for $1,000, you can come out of the con, you know, like a king. You know, it's really exciting, and for those of you, like I said earlier before, if you're unfamiliar with you know, your planning for the convention or what to expect at the convention, these are some good tips financially for you to plan ahead of time. Don't just go in there and think, you know, I've got $100, this is all I'm going to get. You know, $100 generally doesn't get you very far at the convention.
Well, it depends on what you're going for. I mean, yeah, if you go for smaller stuff, you can come out with 5 or 10 toys if you get something cheap. But yeah, if you're going to go for like vintage G1s or alternators or whatever the
even
hot new
some
toy
vintage
released.
Beast Wars. I saw Beast Wars at really high prices last year, and it surprised me. You know, I'm like, wow, I can remember whenever you could get one of these for like $5. You know, now that $5 toy is $25 to $30 now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, it just depends on what you're going after. I mean, there are things you can get. I'm drawing a blank off the top of my head, but you can get a lot of incomplete G1s, and you know, maybe in some rough shape. A lot of loose toys from newer series like Armada, Energon, Cybertron, maybe even some loose animated. I don't know about this year, but maybe last year you could have. I mean, there's toys you can get. And you can get good deals, and you can get quite a few toys in decent shape for the money. You know, but if you're going to try to get like mint on card stuff, the newer stuff that's still sealed, popular items, or like I said, vintage G1s that are like mint and complete, yeah, $100 isn't going to go very far.
Yeah. But I think that'll do it for our intro chit chat here. We've went almost 30 minutes, but I mean, I think it was well worth it, especially for those who were green to the BotCon experience.
Time now for our
eBay item of the week this week is kind of tying in with our Leonard Nimoy mention that we had at the top of the show. We'll speak more about that later in particular, but kind of related to it, this eBay item of the week is a Generation 1 Mint in Box Galvatron. It's 100% complete, and the current bid on it is only $46, but I do anticipate it going quite a bit higher.
Yeah, this is, the box looks to be in pretty good shape for a vintage toy. You know, if I didn't already have a vintage Galvatron 100% complete in good shape, as well as the purple reissue, and I even have the e-hobby reissue, which was basically just this one. Now, the difference is the artwork is purple, as opposed to, you know, the toy color like this one is, like the vintage. You know, it's good enough for me. I figure I am G1 Galvatron out. But otherwise, I would be looking at this. I don't know what's going to end up going for, but that is really cheap, the current bid. Leonard Nimoy did Galvatron in the movie. This is a Galvatron toy. Again, I am insane Galvatron. I love Galvatron. But if you're interested in this, listeners, if this podcast goes up before the auction ends, do not worry. I will not be bidding against you on it because I have enough Galvatrons.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a fine specimen.
Very fine specimen. The box still looks to have a nice sheen to it, a nice reflective surface. Looks to have very minor edge wear, which you would expect on a 20-plus-year-old box. But it looks really nice. Like I said, $46 is the current bid on it, $705 shipping. 2 days and 22 hours as of this recording remaining on it. The seller is Primetime exclamation point 84, has 285 feedback score with 100% positive feedback. Location is Austintown, Ohio. And the item number is 180-644-279-772.
Something interesting I just noticed. PayPal. Just noticed looking at the pictures he has here is the instruction booklet. Mm. Galvatron is mistransformed on the instruction booklet. I never noticed that before.
Yeah, I remember that.
It looks like the thing that's supposed to be sticking up on his back is trying to stab him in the back.
I think it kind of like just drapes over that little trigger on his back, too. It's supposed to, the way it's supposed to go.
Yeah, it's supposed to just kind of point up. And it's pointing toward his back instead of straight up.
Hmm. Even back then, they were mistransforming them.
Hmm.
But, it's a really nice auction. You may be able to pick up a nice minty boxed Galvatron for a decent price if you check out this auction. If I can get it edited and the podcast edited and up on the server within the next day or so, you might actually have a chance on it. If not, check out the link. Look at a nice
Galvatron you could have had.
Galvatron, yes.
Now it's time for Out My Wallet.
Well, this is for the first time in a few weeks. My wallet has actually had reason to say ouch. I've actually managed to pick up a couple things, although not that much. I really didn't spend that much money when you look at the things I have here. It was less than $50, at least on toys. One thing I did get was the plane tickets, which obviously, if we're going to the show, we've already mentioned that. So that was the big hurdle, but again, I had money set aside for that. That was a planned purchase, just stuff I picked up because it became available. First thing I got was I got the Preview Prime that you mentioned a week or so back that you picked up, though. The one with the 3D glasses and the little jet pack, and it's the, I guess it's the new Scout class starting with Dark of the Moon. And I know you were, I think originally a lot of people when they first look at this one think it's like a Legends because his transformation, it does kind of remind you of a Legends in the way he transforms and his complexity. It's got a couple extra joints, like with the way the hips slide forward. So I wouldn't say it's entirely, exactly like a Legends transformation. It's a little more complicated, but not by much. And, comparing it to a Legends, you can tell, okay, this is obviously bigger. But at the same time, it is smaller than a Scout. And I think this just has to do with the rising oil prices. I think Hasbro's kind of changed its direction by calling their Scouts and their Legends are being grouped into a new category called Cyberverse. And you have the Commanders and the Legion, which is basically like your leaders and everybody else. And they're changing the scale. I mean, if this is going to be the new Scout, it's going to be at the current Scout prices. But you're getting a smaller toy. I'm not going to say less toy because, you still get a nice transformation. The toy looks good. You can't really put a price tag on play value. But there's definitely less plastic here. I'm not sure what to take of that. The Scouts have been pretty neat for what they are for just a smaller size toy. But shrinking them even smaller, it's like a new class between the old Scout and Legend. I kind of dig it for what it is. Movie Prime simplified and smaller. It's much nicer than the Legends version I have. I'm still not sure what to think about this new size class, though. A little disappointed because we're supposed to be getting a Power Glide in this, and I was thinking he's going to be the size of the other Scouts that we've gotten, like the new Wind Charger, which I still yet to find, but I have worked out a deal. I've got one coming. If Power Glide's in this scale, he's going to be even smaller than the Scouts, and that kind of worries me.
Yeah, he's going to, roughly they're about the size of, maybe a little bit larger than the mini-bots in G1, but they're a comparable size in my opinion.
Oh yeah, well they're definitely bigger than the mini-bots, but Yeah, they would actually, to me, the Scouts have been the perfect mini-boss because they're big enough to have articulation and detail, but still smaller than your Deluxes, which most of your Classics will be. You know, so to me, the Scout already was kind of your mini-bot, but these are like Scouts make these look like mini-bots. That's kind of sad, but, you know, hey, that's the way the world turns. You know, things happen. Hasbro can't control the price of oil. All they can do is buy the oil-based products, which in this case would be plastic, at the market price. And if they want to hit that $10 price point, or in the Scouts, the, I think they're like $8.99 in most places now. If they want to hit that $9 price point, they have to work with the price of the materials and get it there. And sometimes that means downsizing the toy.
Yeah.
But anyway, enough about the new size class. That's my biggest reaction to that toy. I also picked up the Reveal the Shield Legends G1 figures. Got them from Hasbro Toy Shop, as tends to be where most of my toys are coming from nowadays. Because of all the glutton of Hunt for the Decepticon stuff, none of the 2011 toys have been hitting the shelves. But a few
we'll
Deluxes.
Talk about that here in a minute.
Yeah. So I've got the Legends. It's just the four-pack. I think it's Prowl and Trail Cutter, which is Trailblazer. I guess they must be Wave 2. Hasbro Toy Shop sells them in a four-pack. So I got the Prime, the Megatron, the Starscream, and the Gold Bumblebee, who basically is Goldbug. Goldbug, I mean, he's just a repaint of the Universe Legends Bumblebee. Nothing really super spectacular. It's just a repaint. I got to say, though, the new ones I was really impressed with. Especially that Optimus Prime. I can't help but think if they were to upscale it and give it a little more complexity, make it like a Voyager, it would be a better Prime than the Classics Prime we have. You know, take the same transformation, upscale it, and of course you got to complicate it a little bit because it would just, you know, have these large ball joints. It'd be way too simple at that scale. But I mean, he doesn't have anywhere near the kibble like on the arms. He has a much more proportionate look. I mean, I just think he looks fantastic. I mean, he's one of the best Legends figures I've ever, you know, bought. I love him. Starscream is a real close second. I mean, his transformation is way more complex than you would expect, and yet it's intuitive and fun, and he pulls off both modes very well. I mean, if you've had Legends figures in the past, like say you had the movie Legends Starscream or the Megatrons, you know, these, the ones that turn, I mean, the previous Jets and the Legend scale, they usually don't work very well. You know, one mode or the other suffers severely, but Starscream pulls off the Jets robot at that scale very well. Really surprised me how well it worked. And then, of course, you have Megatron, who pulls a very close to a third of those three. I mean, he's nice. You know, I mean, when he transforms, there's a little too much of, like, his abdomen section visible in gun mode. But again, at that scale, you really can't collapse the chest down to hide it.
I think the number one thing I hate about that toy is the orange cap that they put on this tiny little gun.
It's easily removable with some, you know, rubbing alcohol, though. I have yet to do that to mine, but I do plan to. I guess, though, for a Starscream, the fact that it doesn't really have the scope and the, you know, and the shoulder stock and the, you know, the long silencer barrel that Megatron, it just looks like the original toy minus all that stuff was just a handgun. Which, you know, I mean, I guess it's kind of neat, but, you know, when you think of Megatron in gun mode, you don't think of just that little Walther P-38. You think of the full extended model, and that stuff's kind of missing. But I wouldn't really knock that against it, because it's been really hard to work that in. Heck, even the G1 toy, that stuff had to be removable. But, I mean, it's not bad. I like the transformation. It works. I mean, it doesn't hide parts as well as you would hope, but it's not bad. Again, it's really nice for a Legend. It surprised me at how good it is for a Legend. It just, you know, it, like I said, it's not that it's a bad toy. It's just I think Prime and Starscream are better toys. And they all three really outshine the Goldbug because, again, it's showing its age, even though it's only 3 years old at this point. Just the complexity, just the engineering has surpassed 3 years ago so much that, and being in the same wave, I mean, Goldbug just, he's a good toy, but when you put him with the other three, you're kind of like, why did I even buy this? But had you picked it up by itself,
I'm kind of
like,
excited
wow.
to get the Goldbug because I was never able to find the Bumblebee Legends figure in the store way back when because the distribution on Bumblebee and Cosmos and Warpath, whenever they came out back then, and Wheelie, they were just so hard to find. I never saw one in the store, so I'll be happy to pick this one up.
Right.
Hopefully it'll have a lot better distribution than the previous legends like this.
Well, we'll talk more about that when we get to that section of our podcast about the online hunting. But yeah, he's an okay toy. Like I said, he's a good toy. If you pick him up by himself, you'll love him. But I'm just saying, if you pick him up at the same time as the other three, if you open the other three first and then you open him, you'll be a little disappointed. That's a testament to how good Hasbro has gotten at engineering these things in the last 3 years. But he's not by any means a bad toy, but that would be my ranking of the four if I were going to rank them. Prime the best, followed by Starscream, then Megatron, and then, you know, Goldbug pulls up the rear. And the last item that I got, I'm not going to comment on your laughter there.
I'm sorry, I have a gutter brain.
Yeah, well, I did kind of set that up unintentionally. But the last item I picked up this week that made my wallet go out.
Richard Gere.
Okay, we weren't going to go there. It's Goldbug, not a gerbil. It's Goldbug, not Gold Gerbil. Okay. So continuing on, my experience with Power Core Combiner so far has been limited only to the two packs. I picked up a Leadfoot a while back, and then here more recently I picked up a Huffer. And so I have my first five pack. I got the Grimstone and the Dinobots. Now, not having owned any of the five packs, only the two packs, I transformed them into the torso mode, but I didn't have any of the limbs. And some of them are okay figures, like Leadfoot. He's an okay figure. I got him mostly as an homage to a Power Master. They were okay toys, you know, as far as going from robot to vehicle. And then the combined mode made no difference to me, so I didn't have any drones. But it wasn't really anything super impressive at my first initial reaction. But this is my first experience with the actual transforming drones, and I can see why this line failed. Now, what's bad is everyone else I've heard talking about the Power Core Combiners, you know, people who've bought them all or nearly all of them, you know, tried to support the line in hopes that it would go further. You know, they'll talk about how, you know, there were some hits and there were some misses and there were some really good toys, and the, you know, Leadfoot was one of those really good toys that I just found mediocre. From everybody I've heard review Grimstone, he's supposed to be like the pinnacle of this line. As far as the five packs, he's supposedly like the best as far as just build quality, you know, to be for sturdiness and durability, and just execution of the gimmick. He is supposedly one of the best ones. If that's the case, I can see why this line failed. The commander himself, his transformation, and it could be just because he's a dinosaur, maybe a vehicle will be a little more complex. I mean, after all, Leadfoot was a little more complex than this. He's way too simple. For his transformation from one mode to the other, not very satisfying at all. I mean, it's nice, it looks good in both modes, but the amount of parts you have to move to get it from robot to dinosaur, you know, to me, that's what Transformers are about. It's about the engineering, it's about the transformation. I like a complex transformation, as long as it's not so complex, it's frustrating. But this guy was just overly simple and made me feel like, wow, I can't believe I paid that much money for something that simple. And my first experience with these drones. Now, first off, I love the way these guys look, especially in dinosaur mode, because they're basically like G1 dinosaurs. They're gray, they look like robotic dinosaurs, not real dinosaurs.
They maintain the G1 dinosaur aesthetic, or Dinobot aesthetic.
They do very well, and I love the way they look, especially as a group. When you take the commander and the four drones all together as dinosaurs, they look great. I love that. And I will admit that once you have it all combined, it looks good. A lot of people refer to this guy as Dino Pope because his head kind of looks like he's got a Pope hat. And like I said, he looks great. My problem with him was, again, the transformation was way too simple to get him to, you know, either mode. And then the limbs, when I try to clip them on, it's like where they kind of auto-transform. If you're not holding them in the right place,
they won't transform at all.
Yeah, well, because you're trying to push it on, and you're holding one of the pieces that needs to move during the transformation. So, I'm trying to push the things on, and I'm holding it in the wrong place. And the time I figure out what parts are trying to move, so I figure out where I should be holding it to push it on. It still seems like it's way too tight. I can't hardly get the pieces on there, especially when you consider the little connector ports that are on the body that stick out that plug into the drones. You know, they're usually on hinged parts, and with the amount of force needed for them to push into the hole, well, the hinge wants to move. So I'm like trying to push a thing in, and instead of it going in, the hinge would fold down, and the toy slip off and scrape my knuckle. It's like, ouch. Mm.
That's a very common thing with the Power Core Combiners. Even on the other ones that I have, the Automorph gimmick is very.
I think it hurts. It's
hindered, and if in the case of Bombshock, which in my opinion is the best one of the group, and it was the very first one that came out, or the first one that I found. He's very poseable, but you got to be careful when you're posing him, because those little blue power core links that you connect the limbs to, the limbs will pop off if you go a little bit too far in you know, moving it for a pose.
Well, I find that
very annoying.
I think that's the improvement on this one is he is rock solid. I mean, I can pick him, I can shake him, I can drop him, I can grab the arms, legs, move them however I want. They do not come off. But the side effect of that is they're so tight and hard to get on there. And I can just see this. I mean, you know, kids would look at this in the package. It looks really cool to talk to mom into buying it for them. Okay, they, you know, transform it into the torso mode. They try to plug the limbs on, and they either have the problem where the limbs go on, but then they fall off really easy, so the kid can't really play with the toy because it keeps falling apart. Or you have one like this where he can't even get them plugged on, and he's hurting his fingers when the parts slip. And so I can see kids getting frustrated, not wanting it, word of mouth spreads to the parents. You know, hey, don't buy them that. You know, I bought my kid that, and he hates it. He thought he was going to like it, but he hates it, you know. And I can see why this line failed. And what's sad is it could have done better because, like I said, the hardest problem with getting these limbs on was, again, trying to figure out what's going to move so you know where to hold it. Because it takes so much force to put it on, you got to almost grab the whole thing, but then there are parts that need to move. If they'd done away with the Automorph, it goes back to if they'd made these drones transformable, even if it were just like Mini-Cons, really simple transformations about as complex as a G1 MicroMaster, just to say it's going to robot mode, even though very few parts move, it has no articulation. Just, you know, something like that so that you could actually transform it into a limb. That way nothing needs to move. You can grasp it and get a good grip on it and plug it on, because nothing's trying to move in your hand while you're applying force to get it to go on there, because I thought I was going to break it. Because I'm, like I said, I'm trying to push the limb, the arm on, and while I'm trying to push it, parts trying to extend, so I realize I can't hold it there. And to find a place to put your arm where you can apply the necessary force without obstructing the Automorph was the problem. And it just seems like, again, if the Automorph had not been there, it would have been a lot less frustrating to get this thing combined.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's been a running problem throughout the whole Power Core Combiner line. You know, in premise and thought, it was very good. I was really excited for it when we first saw it last year at BotCon, saw them in the cases. But once you got them in hand and had a chance to fiddle with them, ultimately, I was really disappointed by the whole line.
I think it comes down to a case of being...
I think the sales really show that, too.
Yeah, I think it comes down to they're over-engineered. I mean, the engineering is impressive with the way the things automorph when you plug them on. But it's, like I said, it's over-engineered to the point where it's impractical. Yeah, it's impressive as far as the design, but when you can't even find a good solid spot to grab it to plug it on because so much is moving, it goes to being impractical and makes a poor toy. But then,
yeah,
that's my thoughts
does.
On it.
Yeah. But we'll move on
you?
To we'll move on to what I got here. My wallet definitely said ouch again this week. But I think it'll probably be one of the last large weeks that I'm going to have until BotCon. I might be able to pick a few things up here and there between now and BotCon, but I don't think I'll have as much. I'll get the non-Transformer stuff out of the way. Like you, I spent money on the plane tickets to go out to California to BotCon, and having to buy a set for me and my wife cost me a little over $1,000. So that sent my wallet into a screaming panic. But again, it was something I was braced for. Like I said, I did a little financial kung fu, and
you had your feet set.
I had my feet set, and I absorbed it pretty well. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I got the rental car taken care of for all of us out there. So basically, all we got to do is go up and say "gimme," and they hand us our keys. Well, I'm sure a little more involved than that, but
probably had to write your name down a couple times.
Yeah, I know you're not so much a fan, but my wife and I are. Me to a greater extent. I've always been a baseball fan, and my wife is to an extent as well. I'm a huge Florida Marlins fan, having grown up in South Florida. They just happened to be playing the Los Angeles Dodgers the weekend that we arrive out there. So I have purchased tickets to the Marlins-Dodgers game at Dodger Stadium on May 29th. And my tickets are a few rows up, but it's behind home plate. So we should have a good view of everything. I'm really looking forward to this. It'll be the first time I was able to see the Marlins in spring training the first year they won the World Series in 1997. But this will be the first time I've actually got to see them in a regular season game, and I'm really excited for that. And the venue makes it even better. Dodger Stadium is, for a baseball fan, pretty historic. It's where Kirk Gibson's famous home run in the World Series to win the World Series against the Detroit Tigers. It's where it took place as he limped around the bases. I'm just really, really excited to go there. So I got those tickets, and they're on the way. You're looking at a little over a grand spent there already, and I haven't even got to my toys yet. But like I said, I was braced for those expected and planned expenditures. These other pickups weren't such a big deal. Also, I went to Hasbro Toy Shop, and I was able to pick up another animated figure. I picked up animated Ratchet, the regular version. He was, I think, on sale for $7.99 the day I got him, so he wasn't that bad. Figured I'd go ahead and pick him up to have one more animated figure on my shelf. And I also picked up Rekgar, Reveal the Shield Rekgar, and Lugnut. Very nice figures. And I also got in on the Generations Thundercracker, Cup, Scourge, and Wheeljack action.
I'm so jealous.
From Hasbro Toy Shop.
I want the Thundercracker and Wheeljack. I've worked out a deal. Somebody's buying the entire wave case of the next wave that has those figures, as well as, I think, what's his name? I'm drawing a blank. I can't believe I forgot this Transformers
Warpath.
Name. Yes, Warpath. It has Warpath, Cup, Scourge, Thundercracker, and Wheeljack. And he held off on buying the Cup and Scourge because he was going to get this case and get all the new stuff. And the case storm was going to leave him with an extra Thundercracker, Wheeljack, and Warpath. And so the deal was, I made the deal, okay, you buy the case, I'll buy those three at cost plus shipping.
I went ahead and put Warpath in my pile of loot at BBTS, so I've got one pretty much on the way too soon as they come in stock.
I've got those toys on. They're not on the way yet because that case has not come in stock yet. So seeing all these pictures of Wheeljack and Thundercracker that people are getting and posting is just like, driving me nuts. So I'm so jealous that you got that.
Yeah, I especially love Cup, though. I don't know if you saw the picture I posted on TFW, the Cup and the Quintesson figure from Just Toys or Impossible Toys. Harkening back to that scene in season 3, I believe, whenever a Cup was being held by the Quintessons and questioned. I'll probably try to put that here in the artwork of the Enhanced podcast. So if you're watching, hopefully you'll be able to see it. But that Cup is really awesome. If I had to rank the new figures that I got as far as coolness, the number one cool figure is, in my opinion, Wheeljack. He is by far, I know he's basically just a retooled tracks, but I mean, he just works. I mean, this is probably the best Wheeljack we've ever had, even better than the G1 Wheeljack.
All the pictures I've seen of him, he just looks better than tracks.
Well, I just picked up a 14 megapixel camera a while ago, and I'm going to try it out here. I think there's enough charge on it that I can take a few pictures, and I'm going to try taking a picture or two of it after we get done with this podcast. So hopefully hopefully it'll come through. But yeah, he is really awesome. He's easily my number one. And number two has definitely got to be Lugnut. I am really, really happy with this toy.
Even more so than Scourge?
Yes.
Scourge
yes.
has been getting really high remarks.
Scourge is nice. I'll get to him here in a moment. But Lugnut, he just has a great look to him. His transformation is fun. It's a little bit involved, but not hard. The detail on him is amazing. And his posability is great. I just can't gush enough about this toy. And he's basically just a more realistic version of an animated character. And I just
kinda
love him to death.
Kind of like they did with the Lockdown, which I really love that movie Lockdown, which felt more like a classics yeah. Lockdown to me.
Yeah, that's what this is. It's more like a classics Lugnut. And they really did a good job with him, and I'm so happy to pick him up.
I did see a picture somebody took where they took a toy that I got and a toy you got and put them together, and it was really funny. They took the Legends Megatron and gave it to the Real the Shield Lugnut, and mm-hmm. it was like his Megatron teddy bear, because you remember in you know, animated, he was like all about the Megatron.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's practically Megatron funny. Worship, so he has like a little Megatron teddy bear, and that picture made funny. Me laugh.
But number three would definitely be Scourge. He captures, especially in robot mode, he captures Generation 1 Scourge, his cartoon model, almost to a T. I mean, I really couldn't ask for more in a Scourge figure.
Except to turn into a flying bar of soap.
Yeah, if he is a flying bar of soap, it'd be better. But, you know, I think the stealth bomber trumps the flying bar of soap. Simply for the way this figure is executed, it's really amazing. I can't say enough about him. If I wasn't so enamored with Lugnut, he would easily be my number two favorite out of this batch. Number three, Retgar. He's really nice and captures Retgar in both robot and vehicle mode.
And Retgar is more awesome the more Retgars you have. I mean, one Retgar, yes. He's cool. But you'd think two Retgars would be twice as cool. But no, two Retgars is three times as cool, because the way they can ride themselves, and you can clip them on, you can pose them, pop on a wheelie. Because I have two Retgars, and I have to say, I like Retgar a lot better when I have two than I did when I just had one. So
yeah,
I can't wait for the inevitable junkyards.
I haven't been fortunate enough to pick up two yet. But I definitely will. And I definitely want to get multiple Scourges so I can have his sweeps. I'd like to pick up at least maybe three. But that's to come down the road. I'll just kind of keep an eye out for him. Number four, I would have to say Generations Thundercracker. Now, this is just simply a repaint of an existing Classics toy that we had, the classic Starscream mold, but I have to say this deco is easily the prettiest out of them all, in my opinion. The shade of blue, while I wish was a lot lighter to reflect the animated or animation color from G1, I wish it was lighter, but it's a really pretty shade of blue. The silver accents with the Tampographic Decepticon insignias, it really pops. Even my wife was really, really enamored by it, because I've got it standing on the shelf next to my other classic Seekers, and she even said that it's easily the prettiest out of them all so far. I'd have to
I like
go
that
with,
shade of blue.
Thundercracker.
I don't have that toy, but I love that shade of... That's the color I wanted my car to be. I wanted a blue car, and GM did not offer the shade of blue I wanted. It was like a purplish blue, and I'm like, I forget it, give me red.
Yeah. But Cup, last but certainly not least, he is an awesome, awesome toy. I love Cup, but he's not at the top of the list. Matter of fact, he's on the bottom of the list of the toys that I did pick up. But that's simply for the reason that he has those stupid wheels that kind of dangle off his shoulders. I wish they weren't there. But, I mean, they're not in the way.
I found they will kind of collapse down to where they're, like, against his, like, biceps, like, against the side of his arm. You can't collapse them down to there.
I have them more. I tried them there, and I've tried them up closer to the top of his shoulders, and I prefer them up on the top of his shoulders because they look less intrusive there. But he's still a very nice figure. His face mold is a little bit more involved than I would like, but
yeah, he looks
still
like a ghost.
Cup.
He looks like something you'd see in a scary movie. He's got this ghoulish face. Is the only way I can describe it. It doesn't.
Yeah,
look,
almost like he's off a Scream or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like what you would imagine a Transformer zombie to look like when the face is all dehydrated and the skin's all sucked in. You know, he's got like a zombie face, and I just don't care for it. That's the only thing about that toy I don't like is the face. Which, yeah. You know, when I first heard that iGear was making the replacement headset for that toy, one with the Saigar and one without, my first thought was, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, for the most cases, you know, most deluxes come with a head that's good enough. Yeah, you usually don't want to replace it unless it's just drastically wrong, like the wrong color, wrong shape. Which I actually have a story. I had the Generations Red Alert, and I put the War for Cybertron Generations Cliff Jumper. I put his head on the Red Alert because Red Alert's head was the wrong color and shape. And it looks much better. But I thought, but for the most part, that's not necessary. And Cup's head is going to look good enough until I got the thing in hand or and saw some close-up pictures. And I was like, no, that face just doesn't work. I actually see why iGear made a new head, and I'm going to have to pick up that set at Botcon.
I'm happy with his head. It like I said, I think it's a little over-molded, but I think it still works. He's a really nice figure, and the color scheme is exactly what it should be. I'm really pleased with this wave, and it's been really, really hard to pick up these figures in store, as you was beginning to allude to earlier. You know, it's nowadays you go into a store, depending on your location. I know there's some areas that it's not really that hard to find some of these new figures. I know there's a guy that you and I mutually follow on Twitter. You know, he posted a picture earlier today of a shelf jam-packed full of Retgar, Scourges, and Cups. You know, it's like, you know, why can't we have those here?
I actually haven't checked Twitter today, so I missed that picture. I'll have to look at that now.
But that being said, you know, if you go into a Walmart or a Target in anywhere in this area or a Meijer, it's really difficult because all you find is old wave stuff. I'm talking War for Cybertron Cliff Jumpers and Thunder Wings, Generations Megatron, Soundwave, Dirge. They're really, really clogging the shelves. And recently,
Reveal the Shield.
Yeah, no Reveal the Shield. The only place I've been able to find Reveal the Shields are in Kohl's. Around the beginning of December, they got the Trax and Jazz wave in. And I haven't seen any of the other large market stores such as Walmart or Meijer or Target.
Well, you did get your Perceptor at Kmart.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that's the only time. The
problem with the yellow card Reveal the Shield is at least most of those large market stores you were talking about are jammed full of the Hunt for the Decepticons. You know, this was the last wave or two of 2010 is still clogging the shelves, and when they finally sell down and they restock, it's more of those 2010, you know, last waves.
Yeah, and it's like Hasbro had a budget to produce toys, and it's like they just took that budget, and it's like, okay, this is the last wave of this year that we have this budget allotted for. Let's just spend the budget and make as many of them as possible.
But well, I think it had more to do with the holidays.
Well, I know, but I mean, I think the bad part of it is that the line or that wave consisted of two or three repaints of figures that were really not popular, and they're still on the shelf. Yeah,
See Attack Ravage.
Yeah, Jet Blade. I just get really tired of seeing those, and everywhere I go, I know my local Meijer recently sold out of Transformers entirely. They had none on the shelf.
Put them on clearance to make that happen, though, right?
Yeah, but they've went now for 2 months, and not had a single Transformer in the store. I'm talking in Legend size, Basic, Deluxe. They haven't had a single one in the store for 2 months. The shelf space, the 4 foot shelf space, is just there, completely naked. I took a picture of it. I think I posted it on Twitter not too long ago. They had a set of the Revenge of the Fallen walkie-talkies hanging there. Wow. In the place. It's like, this is where Transformers should be, but we don't have any. Last week, they actually got a case. Not a full restock, mind you. It's just like they called another store and said, hey, we're completely out of Transformers. Send us a case of Transformers. And the case that they put up, Thunderwing, Cliffjumper, War for Cybertron, Soundwave. Yeah.
That was the case that they put up. The Meijer that's in the town I work in, it's in Lexington, that I actually checked from time to time, had done the same thing. Everything was completely empty except the Generations Deluxes. And those looked like they'd sold down, and then I went in there and they had restocked, and it was an even older wave than that. It was Wave 1. There were like about 6 Drifts, like 4 War for Cybertron Primes, and like 3 War for Cybertron Bumblebees. It was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just becoming so hard as a collector to find exactly what you're looking for. You know, it used to be, you know, you could do either or. Find what you want online, find what you're looking for online, or you could just go out with by yourself or with a friend like you and I used to do a lot. We still do from time to time. But just go Transformer hunting, you know, go hopping from store to store in a town like Lexington that has, you know, numerous stores you can go to, that you can go to, and, you know, just basically hunt for the figures you're looking for. Well, nowadays, you know, with the rising prices and gas, plus the fact that the shelves are being overclogged with old stuff that is not really popular, that's just not selling. They sat there week after week after week after week, and even after I'm put on clearance, I know the aforementioned Meijer that I was talking about, they put their stuff on clearance, and it took it almost 2 months just to sell out. Mm. You know, and they didn't really have all that much to begin with. You know, I think they had a couple leader class and maybe 6 or 7 deluxe figured cards, or carded figures, and combined power core combiners with the 5-pack and the 2-packs, they might have had 10 figures altogether. And it took them almost 2 months to get rid of those. So, you know, even on clearance, these figures just aren't moving. So what is a collector like you and I and the listener supposed to do? You and I have, and a lot of people have resorted to getting our figures online. If it weren't for a place like HasbroToyShop.com, you know, I wouldn't have Thundercracker or Wheeljack or Lugnut. I mean, it'd just be so far from my thought, you know.
Exactly. All my new stuff has come from there. You know, my Retgars, both of them. My 4 Scourges, because I have Scourge and 3 Sweeps. My Cup. My Perceptor. My Legends, G1 Legends, you know, Grimstone, the Power Core Combiner picked up. All of this I've gotten from HasbroToyShop.com because, like you said, the old stuff's clogging the shelves around here. We're not going to find it.
And it's a possibility that, you know, with the fact that this old stuff is clogging the shelf, it's a possibility that, you know, Dark of the Moon toys will be hitting within probably the next 2 months. It's realistic. We've already seen the preview prime out that you mentioned that you picked up earlier this week.
Also from Hasbro Toy Shop.
Yeah, but, you know, those are readily available on store shelves now at Walmart. $7.88 is the most common price that I've seen for them at Walmart. You know, it's not going to be long until we'll actually see Dark of the Moon. They'll have to replace, because, you know, that's the big movie line. That's the thing that they're going to have to push out on the shelf. That's exactly the reason why they're clearancing all this Revenge of the Fallen stuff. So Dark of the Moon's coming out soon. It'll be taking up the Transformer spot. There is a high possibility that you won't be able to find the Reveal the Shield waves. such as Jazz and Trax and Perceptor and Retgar. The generation stuff may or may not hit in some areas.
Yeah, so
it's a possibility you'll miss something completely.
There have been conflicting reports on generations. Hasbro had said it was going to run alongside the movie, but then there have been people who work at a Walmart have said that it's in the computers as I can't remember what the designation was, but there's a designation for it, meaning we're not going to order anymore because we're selling out to do away with it. There have been reports that Generations has been found that way in some Walmart computers. So it may or may not run alongside the movie, in which case some of these figures may show up. But, you know, yeah, anything in the yellow card, you know, like Perceptor, Retgar, G2 Prime, the Classics Bumblebee, those guys are going to be near impossible to get because that line is going away when the movie comes out. And we're still sitting on a ton of Hunt for the Decepticons. It's just not showing up.
Yeah. Well, when you stop and look at it, though, you think, you know, well, it's expensive to shop online because not only do I have to pay for the figure, but I've also got to pay for shipping. But you got to step back and look. Okay, if you're hunting Transformers out in the stores and you're like me, you know, I've got maybe two, maybe three stores here in the town that I live in that I can actually purchase a Transformer in. Whereas if I drive 25 miles away to Lexington, you know, I can find 15, 20 stores that I can shop in and find a Transformer in. And I'm being generous with that number, but, you know, I mean, that's 25 miles there, 25 miles back, that's 50 miles just to and from the town. That doesn't include the in-town driving, you know, from store to store. You know, that can really rack up. I know I've spent at least a half a tank of gas just doing that before.
Yeah, the amount spent on shipping is less than you're going to spend on gas.
Yeah.
And not to mention not only that, but for me, the other thing is time. I just have so much going on in my personal life that I just don't have time to hunt. Yeah, I'm only, you know, 15 miles from Lexington. I'm on the other side of it, and there's lots of stores there. But I just don't want to spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours in an evening after work running around all the stores looking for stuff, and I may not even find anything.
Yeah.
Between the gas as well as, you know, can you put a price on your time? I would rather just pay the $8 shipping and order it all online.
Exactly.
Especially when you consider you're buying toys that are $12 a piece for deluxes, $22 a piece for Voyagers. What's another $8 to save yourself the time and the gas driving around? I mean, if you can't afford $8, you probably can't afford to be in this hobby to start with. I mean, yeah. It's less than the cost of a deluxe.
Yeah. Well, that and the fact that, you know, if you, like you said, the time and everything. Now, you know how I said it's been very difficult to find some of these toys, but that's not saying that these toys have not been found in this area at all. Now there has been reports and there has been people that actually have picked up a Retgar and a Scourge and what have you in this area, but they've all been in places like Lexington. But the people that you see picking them up are the guys that actually live in Lexington. Or the immediate surrounding areas like Nicholasville and the like. You know, it's easy for someone that lives in the town, you know, to just run over by Toys R Us or run by this Walmart and pick something up when you live in that town. Even if you live on the other side of town, you know, you're only going maybe 5-10 miles max out of your way. Whereas me, it's a little bit more difficult for me to go that far, you know, just to hunt and possibly not find anything. So, you know, it's for those who are in more outlying areas, I think the new trend will be more online shopping for the current wave stuff. Now, you know, like whenever it gets to the Dark of the Moon, I'm sure that will be widely available. It won't be hard to find at all. You know, online shopping with that for that kind of stuff would be kind of stupid, but
I don't know. I'm sure there's bound to be like that one figure that gets short packed.
Oh yeah, but
or really sought after.
I'm talking about just generally stuff. You know that.
Leader Bumblebee.
Everywhere. Oh yeah, I'm sure there'll be buttloads of Bumblebee everywhere. So, you know, it's the wave of the future. And, you know, I kind of wonder, it makes me wonder about the state of the toy collector. You know, can Hasbro survive on online sales alone? You know, if it goes to the point where the only way you can really buy the toys you want is to get them off of online toy stores such as Hasbro Toy Shop or Walmart.com or ToysRUs.com, Amazon, what have you. You know, is it enough to sustain the toy industry as a whole? You know, I mean, you'll be able to buy toys like the Dark of the Moon in stores, but for the most part, you know,
the majority of the toy market, it's parents buying things for their kids. Because, I mean, they are toys. I mean, the collectors, I think we make up a bigger chunk than we're given credit for, because the heavily collector-oriented stuff does sell out really fast. You know, if a toy line is supposedly marketed toward kids, you know, you take that one classics figure of, you know, of a character that hasn't had a new toy since 1984 and see how hard it is to find on shelves.
Wheeljack.
So, I think we make more of a dent than Hasbro wants us to believe we do. You know, obviously, I mean, look at a collector-oriented line like Classics, but yet it was so popular they brought it back. It was supposed to be a filler line. Well, let's throw the collectors a bone, that little measly, like, you know, 2% of our market, just to kind of hold just something on the shelves until the movie comes out, and then look how popular it was. So I think we hold a bigger stake than they think, but it's not a big enough stake to be a controlling stake. It's still primarily aimed at kids, but they realize that if they aim enough of the kid stuff at us, it'll sell really well. And I think a lot of this stuff we want, we can pick up online, but I don't think parents are going to be buying their kids the toys online. I think that's only going to appeal to the collectors who are looking for specific figures that they can't find because clogged shelves. The majority of your parents, you know, are still going to be buying, even if they only have 85%. Even if collectors make 15% of the sales, kids are the other 85%. And most of the time, the parents are going to just buy it at the store while they're there, while they're out. They're not going to bother going online hunting something. Because if the kid just wants a Transformer, they're just going to go to the store, look over the Transformers. If there's a specific name they mention, they're going to look for that name. They don't see it, they're going to grab something else. You know, they're not going to go through the trouble of getting online and trying to, you know, keep hitting refresh on a listing for toy waiting for it to go in stock because it goes out of stock in 5 minutes. Parents aren't going to do that for kids. So I don't think we're ever going to see the day where it's needed to be sustained online. I think the retail presence is going to stay strong because of the majority of the market is buying it in retail. I think you are going to see more collectors go to online, though, just because we're getting tired of trying to find the toys. But I don't think it's going to be anything that's going to endanger the retail end.
Interesting thoughts. Interesting. Let's move on to our final few segments here. We're running a bit long this week, so...
Reporting directly from Hyacon, this is the Cybertron News Network.
All right, in this week's Cybertron News, our first item of business is the return of Leonard Nimoy. For those of you who have been under a rock for your entire life, he was Spock on Star Trek, the original series, and the movies, and various incarnations of the franchise in that. And he was also the voice of Galvatron in the G1 1986 Transformers movie. He is returning to the franchise for Dark of the Moon as Sentinel Prime, the predecessor to Optimus Prime. Now, I know you're a little bit excited for this, aren't you, Greg?
Yes, I am. I'm a little excited and a little disappointed all at the same time. I mean, obviously being the Galvatron fan, you know, huge fan of Leonard Nimoy doing the voice in the original movie. But, you know, he comes back, yay, but he's not a big angry purple Decepticon. Boo. He's actually an Autobot this time, so that's kind of disappointing. It's like, come on. Okay, there's no Galvatron in the movie. There is a Shockwave. At least he's a purple Decepticon. Give him that role, but I'll take what I can get.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's really nice to have somebody as famous as Leonard Nimoy being associated with the franchise once again. Now, it is of important note that Michael Bay was recently stated, I believe it was on Twitter, I may be wrong on that, but he actually wanted to get Leonard Nimoy to do a voice of one of the characters in Revenge of the Fallen, but didn't because he was afraid that he would push his asking price would push the film way over budget. And we're talking about a $220 million budget or so, as it were. So, you know, he was a little bit afraid to get Spock then, but I guess now he kind of planned it, and he got Leonard Nimoy. And I'm really excited as both a Star Trek fan and a Transformer fan. I love to have his voice for any character, be it a Galvatron or Sentinel Prime or a Wheelie. I don't care. Just have Leonard Nimoy in there, it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too. I mean, like you said, it's Spock, you know. But I have to wonder though about the comment with the, you know, his asking price pushing it above budget. You know, I know he's really famous, and I know Shatner has a bit of an ego, so I can see him being kind of costly. But Nimoy never really struck me as that type. I mean, how much could he possibly want to be in a movie, especially as just a voice?
It's you'd be surprised, you know. I mean, look at Peter Cullen and Frank Welker. You know, their asking prices are extremely high too, from what I understand. But that's because they've made their life at, you know, voice acting, and they are well known. They've done. I mean, Peter Cullen. I mean, he did the voice of Eeyore for the Disney. Brand for so many years. I mean, he is Eeyore to me because ever since I was a child, you know, I recognize Eeyore's voice, and that was Peter Cullen. He was a voice of Voltron, you know, Defender of the Universe, and Optimus Prime. You know, he's had so many iconic names, related to him. Plus, he's done movies. The same with Frank Welker. Frank Welker has a IMDb database that is miles long because of all the voices and sound effects that he has provided, because he is so versatile. So I can actually see somebody being highly sought after for their voice. And with someone as recognizable as Leonard Nimoy, yeah, I could see his price being actually pretty high.
Yeah, no. But I mean, I'm thinking in the context of a $250 million budget. You know, I mean, surely it's not like he's going to be $50 million, you know, for one movie to where it's going to bust the budget out.
You know, it's also Michael Bay, too. He's probably grandizing it enough that you know, he's stretching a bit. I mean, he is a director in Hollywood for.
Yeah, he likes explosions, so he's going to blow things up out of proportion.
Oh, yeah. But moving on to our next subject, won't spend a whole lot of time on it, but it's kind of interesting. The Munitioner and Explorer from Fans Project will be getting some repaints here as War Cry and Flame Blast, respectively. Kind of have a G2 vibe to me in their color schemes. I don't know if they actually are intended to look like certain characters, but... That's kind of what I feel from
it. I had heard there were certain characters they were supposed to look like. I'm not sure if it was G2 or not, but my understanding, and this is, again, just rumor that I read somewhere, and I can't even remember where to send a link, that these guys were not going to have the combiner bits because the figures are so fantastic on their own, you know, because most people got them for the you know the Bruticus upgrade, just stuck him on Bruticus and left him there. So you basically got this really well engineered, you know, Humvee transformer that's just stuck in Humvee mode as a leg. And so the idea was with these repaints, they're re-releasing these guys as different characters without the combining bits, so that you can just kind of appreciate them for what they are.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't own them because I didn't have the Revenge of the Fallen Bruticus set to upgrade, so I never bought the first releases. Because it didn't seem like it
makes me so mad because I've owned that toy twice before these were even announced. And once I sold them and then I saw these, I'm like, oh, I even had the Galaxy Force versions, which actually had a better G1 color scheme accuracy, in my opinion.
And what's bad is you sold them before these were announced.
Yeah, and got much less than what they were worth. Yeah,
because as soon as these were announced, the price on those sets went through the roof. I remember seeing them at Target on clearance for like $15,
because
they were originally $20, and then I think I didn't care because you know I owned the Devastator one when it was an Energon, but wasn't impressed enough to ever try to get the others. So I had no desire to have it because I didn't like it. These sets, on the other hand, upgraded it to the point where I would have liked to have had it. But once I saw the set and decided I wanted it, apparently a lot of other people did too, price went through the roof, and now I can't afford it, so I just said, forget it.
Yeah. But that's really, really nice that they're coming out with repaints of Munitioner and Explorer. You might want to check them out. I know BBTS has them up for pre-order, so you can head over to BigBadToyStore.com and check out those. Repro Labels, our friends over at Repro Labels, have put out some more sticker sets as of their March update, and one of them is absolutely made me giddy, and I know you and I both mentioned it in a previous podcast with our anticipation of Generations Wheeljack coming out. Well, yes, they have done a Wheeljack, G1 inspired Wheeljack sticker upgrade set for Generations Wheeljack. And I have already ordered it, and it's on its way.
Well, I'm going to hold off until I get a Wheeljack, but I was looking at it, and they did the same thing they did with the tracks. I really like the molded in detail on that toy, and they kind of try to release their stickers for people who don't want to remove paint apps, so they have to have a big enough sticker to cover it. And so with their track set and their Wheeljack set, both have the same problem where the whole hood is a sticker. And I don't care for that. I don't have a problem with removing the paint apps with some little rubbing alcohol and then putting the sticker of just the design on. But I realize I could probably trim it and cut the white part off and do that. But for me, I think I really like the way Classics Wheeljack looks, with the exception of he needs the numbers and the Italia labels.
Yeah.
And so I was like, kind of lamenting that first, like, oh man, you know, why did that? To me, the stripes didn't really need to be updated, and that covers up the whole hood. Okay, I could just leave those off. But oh, wait a minute, that big sticker on the hood wraps down over the fender, and that's where part of the 539 is on that sticker. And I'm like, oh, that's gonna be a big pain in the butt hassle to, you know, get those, just the numbers and the sponsor decals. And then someone mentioned the obvious that I had not seen. Not necessarily to me, because I hadn't really posted those thoughts. I was just thinking them. A couple other people had posted them, and I thought, well, there's no point in repeating it. And someone responded to them with, well, you know, you could just buy the G1 of Wheeljack Repro Labels and just use the sponsor and number stickers off of that. And it's like, duh. So as much as I can appreciate what they did with this, and I know it looks good, I know a lot of people are going to like it, but I'm just going to order the G1 Repro Labels and peel the, you know, Italia and number stickers off and stick them on my Wheeljack.
Well, I figured what I will do with this, instead of actually replacing the stripes on the G1 Wheeljack, I will, or on the Generations Wheeljack, I'll just cut the sponsors and the numbers out of the sticker sheet.
Mm-hmm. That's what
basically
I was thinking about
doing. Paying $7 for some logos and some numbers. But
yeah. That's what I was thinking of doing until somebody suggested using the G1 sticker sheet. And I'm like, well, duh, that's what I'll do. Yeah. Save me a lot of trouble cutting stuff out, because that'll be just the numbers and the logos.
Yeah, I kind of like the – I want that license plate, too, the Michigan that says the Jack.
Oh, yeah. It would kind of suck not getting their custom plates.
Yeah.
But they also – you mentioned the Thunderwing. I think the Thunderwing stickers look fantastic, and I probably will pick those up. The G2 Jazz set – I don't know. I mean, I kind of like it for the idea that, well, I got a G2 themed BotCon set. You know, I could pick up an extra Jazz and those stickers, and I could have a G2 Jazz sticking there with them. But he was one of those G2 toys. It was kind of like Prime. There were some differences, but not enough to be worth buying a second toy for.
Yeah.
To me, G2 Jazz, because his base color's the same. I know the logos are extremely different, but the base colors are just he looks too much like the regular release of Jazz, so I don't really see a point in a second toy. But, you know, for those of you who have the 2010 convention set and you like the G2 toys and you think it is a good idea to put a Jazz in there, but I like the G2 Sideswipe, you know, completely different colors. I like that better.
Yeah.
But if somebody wants that, I mean, the Repro Labels is great, and I think it does look good. But it's just not for me.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's still really nice. You might want to check them out over at repralabels.com. And I think the set is really, really nice. especially on Wheeljack. I'm happy to pick that up. I mean, as soon as I got my Wheeljack in the mail, matter of fact, it was like day before yesterday. I think it was that very same day that Repro Labels announced this set. And I'm like, ooh, buy. You know, I mean, I didn't even think about it. I just clicked buy. And I don't regret it at all. It's going to make this Wheeljack look even better. Even if I don't use the stripes and everything, you know, just putting the logo sponsors and the numbers on it, it's awesome. Moving on again from to our last topic. Yeah, our last news story. Simon Furman, who is famous in the comic world for his Transformer work, is interested in picking up at issue number 81 of the old Marvel comics.
Yeah, this was interesting. It's just kind of a quote he made. I'm not sure exactly where this was. I got it from the IDW publishing forums, and it was a quote. I'm not sure where the interview or the context of him making the statement, but essentially here's what he said. I'll read the quote. He says, "I actually would like to pick up the baton from Marvel issue number 80 and run with it again. There was a lot we never got to do, and I'd like to revisit or just take the next big steps with all that we'd set up in the previous 20 or so issues. I'd certainly rather do G1 number 81 than G2 number 13, as, strangely, and for no good reason, I can formulate into words, I think the time has passed for G2. It was, well, very 90s.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, I mean, the thing is, I don't know if it's on the IDW forums. I don't know if they're actually planning something or if this was just, you know, asking what he would like to do. But as, you know, some of you listeners may not know, and some of you may, Simon Furman was actually the main writer for the Generation 1 comics by Marvel. I think he picked up around issue 56 or so. He replaced Bob Budiansky. I think it was Bob Budiansky was the primary writer before that. I could have my names wrong, but I know Furman picked it up around issue 56 and ran with it all the way to 80. And so if anybody would be qualified for picking the Marvel series up and picking those stories up and running with it, I think it would be him. Because, like I said, he talked about the things they'd set up in the previous 20 issues. You know, nobody's going to have that kind of insight like he would. I mean, I could read those comics, but there may have been little things he dropped in there as foreshadowing that I just didn't catch as being important. A lot of other writers may not have. So I think it would be great. I love the original comic series, mostly from a nostalgic point of view. It would be interesting to see where they would go from there.
Yeah. Simon Furman, you know, he has his love, the people that love him and the people that hate him. I kind of tend to fall toward, I love the guy. I had the pleasant experience of having dinner with him and Dan Khanna at BotCon in 2006, I believe, the one here in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
I got to sit down and actually eat dinner with him and Dan at the casino night, and I bounced a few things off of him as we sat there and ate. Both of the guys are really, really stand-up gentlemen, really nice, really approachable. We sat and talked, I guess, a good 30 or 45 minutes about the comics. And he was telling me things about what he would love to have done after the G1 comics ended, after issue 80. And I kind of wonder now if those things that he was telling me then are the things that he's wanting to do now. And I would give anything if I could remember what he told me.
I would like to hear that story too.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been so long, and I was just so enamored. Hey, I'm sitting here talking with Simon Furman over dinner. You know, I was just, you know, I, the night was a blur. Had so much fun, and but he was really stand up. And me being a Headmasters fan, you know, I asked him his thoughts on the Headmasters, and to be honest, he said at first he thought the idea was rather stupid. Because, you know, why would a race of alien robots need humans or other robots to kind of cohabitate their bodies? But he said the more he ran with the story and read the stories and everything, he said he really grew onto the concept, and he would love to do a lot more with them. And he said there's some characters, for example, Nightbeat, that he would love to bring into the limelight a lot more. He said Nightbeat actually became one of his more favorite characters that he you know, worked with, you know, as well as Grimlock, of course. But you know, I would love to see what he would could do with issue 81. And
yeah, especially if there's no limitations on the characters. I mean, I know, you know, Marvel, I mean, some of the comic only, you know, characters, I don't know if have much Hasbro rights to those, or if it's like a split rights, you know, towards, you know, like Imrid Exarin, for example. Is that somebody they could use, you know, outside of Marvel?
I don't know if if either him or Jaxus or even Straxus. I don't know if they could actually use those characters if they're copyrighted or what have you by Marvel. But it would be cool to see them bring them back if they could.
Well, I mean, it's a legal issue because, I mean, ultimately Hasbro owns the property.
Well, I'm sure they could do somebody like Straxus, just name him Darkmount like they did the toy.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, probably to make some liberties in the design as well as the names. But, I mean, like I said, comic-only characters, I think that could be the issue where Marvel could own exclusive rights to those. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the legal side of it, but yeah. I could see that being an issue. But I would like to see where he would go with this, and I'd like to know what the purpose of it would be, considering that none of these toys that would be in this, you know, are on the shelves anymore. I mean, at least the new G1 ongoing kind of pushes the classics toys a little bit. You know, there's absolutely no toy line at all. I mean, because they're not redoing, you know, Action Masters. So yeah, I don't know exactly what the purpose would be of it, other than just to tell the stories. And
that
so
that would be fine with me.
Yeah, it'd be fine with me too. But I'm wondering, you know, is Hasbro going to, you know, let IDW do this or allow them to do this? Or are they going to see enough market in this to sell comics to even consider it? Well, I mean, and again, without knowing the context of this quote. I mean, it could just be something Simon Furman blogged that he would like to do, and it may not have, you know, any chance of ever happening for real. It's just something Simon Furman would like to do. Like, I can see and say, I would love to invent a motor that runs on magnets, so you need no fuel. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean I'm anywhere close to making it happen. Yeah. You know, just something I'd like
to
do.
You know, being the proud owner of a new iPad and having the IDW app for the iPad and being able to download the Transformer comics and view them in such a beautiful, bright way and easy to access, and not having to go to the comic book shop to pick up, you know, the issue that I want. You know, I can get them as they come up on the IDW page there on the app. I would easily buy these if they did come out with these.
I forgot about that app. Awesome. I had it on my iPhone.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And I mean, to see it on this huge screen, yeah. I can't wait to pick these up if they do decide to do this. But
but as for now, we're just going to put it under the rampant speculation and rumor. I've done a little reading while you were talking there. It looks like he may have been at JoeCon. Because it was actually an answer to a question, and the question starts out that the G.I. Joe fans were thrilled that Hammond has continued the original ARAH continuity. So apparently, not a whole lot about Joe's, apparently they've continued the original Joe comics. I guess the question came out, you know, would he give any thought to continuing the originals? So this was just a question from some interviewer that, you know, he basically told them what he told you that night over dinner, that he would love to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, there may not be any roots to this to actually happening at all, but I would sure love it. So if IDW happens to be listening to our podcast, you know, if you can make this happen, we would love it, eat it up and buy it.
Absolutely. Well, I don't have anything further to talk about unless you do.
No, I think that pretty much wraps it up for this week.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say what we're going to do next week because I really don't have any idea, and I don't want to raise anybody's hopes and dash them like I did last time. But stay tuned for our next episode. Hopefully, again, our quality is getting better. I've got new tools. I'm still kind of learning. Episode number 18, the audio was a little bit low on it, but I think the overall quality was a lot better. And I'm still kind of working with my stuff here and learning it. It's a whole new program. If you have any issues or suggestions, just shoot me a message or post it on the forums. I'm always open to suggestions. This is your podcast for the listeners. We really want to make a great podcast for you and continue on for years to come. Again, apologies for the late issues of the last two or three podcasts. Like I said, time and again here, I've got some new software, new hardware, totally new setup. So it's taking some time. Yeah, it's taking some time to adjust to it.
Yeah, you got to get it all broke in before you know how to use it.
Yeah. It's going to be an ongoing learning process, but I hope you also enjoy the return of the AAC M4A Enhanced Podcasts. I know I started them again with episode number 18, and they will continue as long as I can maintain the podcast for the Transformers. Hopefully you'll enjoy them. Like I said, again, offer any comments or suggestions. You're welcome to do so on the forums, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good week, everybody.
This has been Geek Existence Transformers, a geekexistence.com presentation. Check out our other podcasts, Geek Existence Gaming for the gaming geek in you, and Geek Existence Science and Tech for your sci-fi, science, and tech interests. Both are available on iTunes as well as our website. You can interact with us by visiting our forums on our website at geekexistence.com/forums, or by following us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekexistence. Search for us on Facebook and send us a friend request. We'd also love to hear from you via email. Our address is geekexistence@gmail.com. Your hosts for this episode were Weird Wolf 1975 and Insane Galvatron. No hamsters or squirrels were harmed in the making of this podcast.